This is Joanna Schrader reporting for DomesticFuel.com, and I am with Ron Elverson from Chester, South Dakota. Welcome to Washington, D.C., Ron.
Well, thank you. We enjoyed our stay.
Well, you've been here. You've actually not had too much fun, probably. You've been out meeting with hundreds, actually, of congressmen and congresswomen to talk about ethanol. So what were some of the common conversations and questions you heard while you were in those meetings?
You know, it really varied. We visited several different states, some pro-ethanol, very friendly to ethanol, and others that absolutely didn't want anything to do with ethanol. So the questions varied widely. Most of them, I guess, revolved around the renewable fuel standard. And, you know, that's quite controversial now. The American Petroleum Institute has kind of, so to speak, they've declared war on that and hope to repeal it. So we had a lot of questions related to that.
Well, Ron, let's explore the RFS for a little bit. Ethanol receives no subsidies, unlike big oil, as we saw here in a press conference today, a century of subsidies. Does RFS completely level the playing field for biofuels, or is this just a starting point that we need in order to give consumers choice?
Well, actually, in light of the specific tax subsidies that the oil industry does receive, the RFS doesn't begin to level the playing field for biofuels versus oil, what oil receives. So, you know, it's very complex, but we do our best, you know, and you heard earlier from Monty Shaw that we really hope to keep the RFS in place because it's just a small, almost a token, you know, I'm not going to call it subsidy, but it's a mandate, but nothing like the oil industry enjoys now.
Ron, I've heard a lot of really good feedback on hearing personal stories from those who were meeting. What's your personal story with ethanol?
You know, I've been, we call ourselves at Dakota Ethanol. There's a bunch of us core guys that started Dakota Ethanol back in the late 1990s, and we call ourselves ethaholics. Kind of a play on alcoholic, obviously, but we're so pro-ethanol that we call ourselves ethaholics. But we're all a core group of farmers that started this into the industry quite a long time ago now. So we've got a lot of seasoning under our belt, so to speak. And we really did start this industry because we wanted to make a difference in our communities. We were coming off years and years of what I would characterize as chronic overproduction of our crops, especially corn, where we'd have a big crop and the government would ask us to idle a bunch of land next year. And as you may imagine, that's really hard to run a business with that, and with those terms. So our initial goal all along was to give us another market for our corn and hopefully raise the corn price. And quite frankly, we succeeded beyond our wildest dreams with the growth of the ethanol industry.
Well, let's talk about your community. Chester's probably not an overly large community. How has your ethanol plant, both from the perspective of you being a farmer and the perspective of you working at the plant, how has it positively impacted your community?
You know, so much more economic activity going on now. We've created about 45 jobs at the ethanol plant, and our town only has 200 people, so it's a big positive impact. Lots of activities going on the ethanol plant. Our farmers, rather than haul the corn to the elevator that gets exported overseas, we drop it off at the ethanol plant, and we add value to that bushel of corn. It spreads out over all of our community and region. So it's quite a large deal for us.
And I do know that you actually have probably more than many an expertise on the environmental side of ethanol, the greenhouse gas reduction. And there's been a lot of controversy. A lot of people like EPA or CARB out in California believe it doesn't have as strong of an impact. But I know you know that's not true. So can you touch a little bit on the great positive impact corn ethanol has on reducing greenhouse gas emissions?
Yeah, as you know, when the RFS was created, it was mandated that they do life cycle assessment of carbon intensity for all these fuels, including gasoline, all the traditional fuels, plus the new biofuels, to give us a benchmark where we sit in terms of carbon reduction. And the first benchmarking that was done used very old data for ethanol because, you know, fresh data, to get that refreshed on a yearly basis is almost impossible. It takes a lot of money to do that. So we were forced with using old data when they first did that benchmarking, and it gave us a carbon intensity score that was almost as high as gasoline. Well, when that happened, the environmental community really kind of stepped back and said, gosh, you know, ethanol doesn't look so good. We're not going to support ethanol so well. Now, after maybe 10 years now since that, well, it's probably been 5 years since that's been done, but there's lots of new data. This stimulated a lot of bioenergy research, and the new data that's coming out is dramatically lowering the life cycle carbon emissions of corn ethanol. So we're really, really pleased to see that new data come out, and I think in a matter of months, or maybe in a year or two, that we'll have this carbon intensity of corn ethanol down to at least 50% of gasoline. So we can represent a really nice reduction in carbon intensity.
So that said, are you going back out to these environmental organizations and taking a proactive approach and presenting this new data?
Yeah, we hope to. You know, we've got a big test case going on now. Each ethanol plant can apply to CARB, the California Air Resource Board, with a new pathway, what they refer to. And that's a new life cycle emission, carbon emissions on their plant and their farmers around that plant that deliver that corn. So we just applied at the end of last year, and that's in the hopper now with CARB. And we just got feedback last week that they've got comments and they got questions, and it involves some credit for soil carbon sequestration under the corn crop. And we think we've got bulletproof data, and we think they have no choice but to accept it. And if they do, it'll be a huge hurdle, and we can go on with that, and I can see just about every plant, ethanol plant in the United States getting that same credit. So got a big test case going on, and we're hopeful.
Well, that sounds exciting. So, Ron, what's some advice you have for other ethanol advocates and consumers who are really passionate about ethanol and biofuels when they're talking to their neighbor, when they're talking to their banker, when they're talking to a legislator?
You know, just talk about all the benefits. Obviously, I think we have the high moral ground. We're renewable fuels. We great economic development in your own communities, jobs. It's just got lots of good things going for it. So don't be discouraged. Keep working hard and get the facts out, and I think we'll win the war.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.